Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Welcome to the 2025 women's lacrosse season, and we are back with the Iowa Women Podcast. I'm Matt Kinnear, hosting Alyssa Cometti and Emily Considine, and we've got quite a first weekend of lacrosse to look after. Several top 25 matchups, some surprises, some upsets, and really the top teams in the country kind of flexing their might this weekend. So some matchups that we might be seeing in May, and speaking of May, the men's and women's NCAA championship weekends are coming back to Gillette Stadium, held jointly for the first time since 2017. If anyone remembers, that was an epic championship weekend. From May 23rd to May 26th, there was nowhere else in the lacrosse world to be than Foxborough, Massachusetts for eight of the best and most impactful games of the season. The action starts Friday with the women's D1 semifinals, continues Saturday with the men's D1 semis, and then championship action on Sunday. Men's D2, men's D3, and women's D1, culminating Monday afternoon with the men's D1 final. Obviously, it's going to be awesome to have everyone in the same kind of same building there, just like it was in Foxborough in 2017. That was such a cool championship weekend. This year, Inside Lacrosse is proud to partner with the NCAA to offer you, our loyal listeners, $5 off single-day ticket options, men and women's, using the code ILPOD at checkout. So head to ncaa.com/laxtickets and enter ILPOD at checkout to purchase your tickets, ILPOD. You know you're going to championship weekend, so why not get $5 off? Just help us show the NCAA how awesome our listeners are and how much you love Inside Lacrosse. Purchase your tickets today. Once again, ncaa.com/laxtickets and ILPOD at the checkout. $5 off your tickets. So guys, this was really fun. First Friday, as we've kind of been calling it, in NCAA Women's Lacrosse, you know, the universal start date. And, you know, it really kind of kicked off with a bang. Action from 11 a.m. with the Johns Hopkins Florida game. It went until 8 p.m., the Northwestern Notre Dame game. Top 25 matchups, you know, all through there. And, you know, I think the first game was probably the most exciting. And what really stood out to me was just the way that the top two teams in the country, Boston College and Northwestern, really kind of exerted their will. So first we'll talk about Boston College 21 over Loyola 7. So this is a top 10 matchup, and Boston College won it 21-7. Alyssa, when you look at that scoreline, does that shock you? Does that surprise you? Or are you kind of expecting that?
So I personally was not. I thought when someone asked me, I thought that it would be like an 8-goal game. You know, just knowing, no slight on Loyola at all, but they had graduated more than Boston College, really. You think about Sidney Black, who was a 100-point scorer. And just filling those gaps, I think early in the season, you have a little bit more of a time identifying this new group, where Boston College really just picked up where they left off in dominance. Obviously, they graduated players like Bell Smith and the Week sisters and Sydney Scales, but, you know, they had a bulk of that national championship experience that returned. So it was a little surprising just about how much they dominated, but, you know, I did think they were going to be heavily favored and would have eventually cruised to a win. But it happened a little faster than I thought.
Yeah, for sure. And Emily, we talk so much, and, you know, this Boston College attack has, you know, so much talent coming back, but, you know, holding Loyola to 7 goals, you know, that really stood out to me. And Shea Dolce, I think, has a level of celebrity now that she made that enormous save in the championship game. But what did you see defensively that, you know, maybe makes this team more multidimensional and not just a team that's going to outscore you?
Yeah. I mean, Shea is an incredible goalie. She had 8 saves in the game, which is a significant amount, especially against a sharpshooting team like Loyola. But I think what really stood out was the amount of caused turnovers that Boston College had. They had 13 caused turnovers, and 4 of those came from sophomore Lydia Colasanti, who saw a decent amount of action last year and was really one of the only freshmen that made, you know, a little bit of an impact. But now with another year of experience on her belt, I think she's going to be quickly a go-to defensive clearer for the Eagles.
And then if you look at, you know, the nightcap game, Northwestern and Notre Dame, you know, that game, the final scoreline, I don't think really kind of tells the full story there. Northwestern won 13-10. Props to Notre Dame for kind of sticking with it and, you know, making a competitive game there at the end when Northwestern stormed out to such an impressive fast start. And, you know, first of all, I think we look at that Ryan Fieldhouse and, you know, there was people packed inside that place. And the social media and the output that Northwestern was putting out, I thought was kind of like symbolic of a program that's a championship level program and the crowd that they had. And, you know, that's going to be the future, not that facility specifically, but Northwestern is going to be the future host of the NCAA Women's Lacrosse Championship, much deserved. And, you know, they looked like champions out there. And I think one of the big questions was like, all right, you graduate two of, you know, the biggest stars in the game. How do you come back with that? And obviously they have the number one player in college lacrosse. But Emily, I mean, it felt like there was no problem. You know, Izzy Skane not there. You're playing an ACC team that's really good. And you come and run out there with, I think, 8 straight goals to start the game. It feels like there's no problems there in Evanston, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, first, you know, Kelly Amonte is no newbie to the game. You know, she has depth. She knows what she recruited. She's thinking far in advance, you know, how teams are going to look before they're even at that place. And I'm sure she was, you know, well-versed in, you know, who was going to fill the gaps early on. You know, I think Northwestern and Notre Dame are kind of going through a little bit of the same thing with, you know, the three top scorers, the big three from Notre Dame graduating, and then, you know, obviously Northwestern graduating, Skane and Kuykendall. You know, the score was a little bit closer than I expected. I definitely thought Northwestern was going to come out a little bit heavier. But at the same time, we're really early in the season. Everyone's still finding their groove. And I think if this game is played later in the year, it's a little bit more dominant on the Northwestern side.
Well, the one thing that we get to see immediately, which is awesome, is we get a number one versus number two matchup, you know, on February 15th of the college lacrosse season. Now, what happens on Saturday doesn't necessarily matter in the long term. You know, obviously these teams are both going to be in the NCAA tournament. They're both going to be competing, you know, for the ACC and the Big Ten championship respectively. But it's just awesome to see, you know, the two best programs. You know, I'd say, I don't know if clearly, because we're going to talk about North Carolina here in a little bit, but two of the clear best programs going at it in such a big game so early. So, Alyssa, you look at this matchup. Where will the matchup be won or lost this weekend?
That's a good question. I mean, I think just something to add about Northwestern looking so strong so early is their transfers that they picked up are really paying off. You know, Nikki Miles having 4 points from she came from Penn, and then Riley Campbell from Harvard had 3 points, but also had 5 ground balls, 4 caused turnovers in that opening game. And so I think the more comfortable that they get, the more dangerous that Northwestern attack will be. But I think early on, I always lean towards early in the season, whatever offense is like gelling more quickly has the upper hand, because I think, you know, by the end of the season, things start to change, and, you know, defenses are usually playing their best. Defense wins championships. So how much you can elevate your game to stop those stars. It's why I think role players and championship weekend emerge as these huge factors. So early on, I think it's usually like the experience and the how much the offense can jive early in the season. And so for that reason, I give Boston College a slight upper hand, just given that there is more consistency in that attack unit. But, you know, that early on, it's hard to count Madison Taylor and company out. You know, she's just such a gamer. She plays her best games in the biggest games. So, you know, I'll watch me eat my words in a week from now. So I don't know. That's my best guess, is just knowing that the Boston College attack unit has a little bit more consistency. Not to say what'll happen down the stretch, though.
Emily, what's your take?
I tend to agree with Alyssa. I think that, you know, right now Boston College has so many threats that can just, you know, they shut one down, someone else is going to step up. I think McKenna Davis was a little quiet the last game. So I think, you know, she's always going to be someone that can be counted on. And I just think they have, like Alyssa's saying, too many consistent players from the year before that have already found their chemistry and groove together. But at the same time, Northwestern can do what Northwestern does at any moment.
Yeah, and it's, you know, bringing up the transfers, that's, you know, really important. And, you know, remember just a few years ago coming out of COVID, Northwestern was the lone team in the Final Four that didn't have any transfers. And, you know, that was kind of a storyline of that Final Four was just, you know, how, you know, Carolina that year and Boston College that year had so many significant new pieces that worked their way in. But, you know, kudos to both programs because transfers can be a huge blessing or they can be a huge curse. And both programs have found, you know, the formula. They've done the vetting. They only bring people into the program that make the program better. And I think that's why, you know, you see their ability to, you know, it's cliche, reload, not just rebuild, because of, you know, obviously their success in recruiting. And we've talked a lot of times about Northwestern, you know, Boston College, I think, gets all these kind of headline recruits. Northwestern just sees something different in everyone than anyone else sees on the recruiting trail and gets these players that turn into tremendous athletes for Kelly's team. But both of them are able to supplement with transfers that fit culturally in a way that, you know, allows them to be consistent year over year. And then speaking of consistent year over year, I think the biggest shock last year was Carolina's struggles. And I saw them in the fall and, you know, Coach Levy and I talked a little bit about it. And basically the players that they had injured last year, you could take all those players and put them on a team and they would be in the Final Four just by themselves. So any team in the country, if you lose that many significant players, is going to have a little bit of a down year. We saw them at full strength and we saw what they can do. And man, they took it to James Madison, you know, with all of their full strength back. Chloe Humphrey, but, you know, looking at the point totals from this weekend, you know, 10 points, 6 points, 7 points, 5 points, 6, you know, all of these significant players having these enormous performances. Betty Nelson starting over Alicia Nicholas in net, I think is going to be a storyline to watch going forward. But, you know, as we're talking about Boston College, Northwestern, a full strength North Carolina has got to be somewhere close to being in that mix. Wouldn't you say so, Alyssa?
For sure. I think this is, you know, now this sophomore class for Chloe Humphrey, redshirt freshman class, is a class that we have talked about for years, you know, since they were juniors in high school, just starting to commit. And then it was just a matter of time for them kind of coming into their own. Obviously being healthy is the most important thing, but it was awesome just to see Chloe just, you know, first game and just pop off like that. Obviously was huge, I'm sure, for her. And then to see players like Addison Patillo and Kate Levy, you know, we had them ranked very highly in this freshman class and they just made an impact right away. And so I think these couple of classes, obviously North Carolina usually does very well regardless, but I think in particular these 2 years were really strongly rated and talked about. So I think despite, even though they're young, it's almost like sometimes youth, I think Mandy O'Leary said it talking about her players that are young and making an impact right away. Sometimes being a naive freshman and sophomore almost help you play more free and play even more dynamically. So it's really fun to watch. So I think, yeah, North Carolina is going to be dangerous, especially, and they also have older players like Olivia Vergano, who is a Virginia Tech transfer, so that has 2 years under her belt there as a key player in the ACC. So you do have that veteran experience that will be useful for them, so it's not just a bunch of like 18-year-olds running around against older players, but they do have a burst of youth and tons of talent.
I want to talk a little bit about some of the notable performances, particularly freshmen. And can you think of a performance that was as significant and unusual, or a moment other than, than Clark Hamilton had, Florida versus Johns Hopkins? So scores a big goal, her first collegiate shot. That is called back, and she is called for an illegal stick, which has got to be, like, if you are a freshman, playing your first game, your own homewood field, it's a top 10 matchup. That happens. Like, oh my God, can you imagine, what would you do right there?
It was like, to tie it or take the lead. It was a huge goal. Like,
yeah.
Oh my gosh. Like,
and then Hopkins went down and scored, right after that. Yeah. So like, you think that you might've like been part of, losing the game. And then you come back just a few minutes later and just complete power move, score, which I guess technically became her first collegiate shot, at least in the stat book. Tie the game, and then you guys go on to win. What a range of emotions from Clark Hamilton at Florida in that game. Well, first of all, Emily, what do you say about someone who reacts that way to adversity? And then what does that mean for Florida, having a freshman who's just playing kind of unconscious out of her own head there in that kind of situation?
Yeah, I mean, I give her a lot of credit because I do not think I would have bounced back the way she did. That could have gone one of two ways. She could have then just taken the rest of the game to sit back and let her teammates do the work, or she, could have done what she did and taken another chance and just had a short memory and put the ball in the back of the net, which was really awesome to see. And I really think, her getting over that little mind, bump early on, allowed her to continue to produce into the next game too. So it was super exciting to see her score. She's a phenomenal player. It was exciting to see her teammates rally around her. And freshmen are going to make freshman mistakes. I think every coach that puts a freshman on the field is expecting things to go a little wonky. So I'm sure that it wasn't a total shock that she had an illegal stick for the coaches. But at the same time, I'm sure they were happy to see her bounce back and continue to perform the way they, hoped she would.
And another new face in that game that I think is really worth noting is Jordan Basso. The Gettysburg transfer, was D3 All-American multiple times, has played in very big games. And kind of the same way that Clark Hamilton was impressed with her just assertiveness to just go to the net and take those shots. As the game went on against Johns Hopkins, Basso, was kind of in that, like, give me the ball, I'm going to go to the net and score mode. And she had two really big goals in that game. So just a lot of, like, poise and assertiveness, especially for a team that, like, lost a lot and needs those people to, like, kind of fill in, not just from the stat perspective, but from the perspective of, I'm going to be the person that steps up in the big time moments. Other kind of big time performances this weekend. Alyssa, I'm going to start with you. What's a performance that you want to highlight, an individual performance from this weekend?
Well, I think obviously, the transfer of Jocelyn Torres to Ohio State to beat Denver, Ohio State's a program that has kind of been up and down. They had some years where they were pretty strong and they've been on a down for a little bit. Getting key transfers like Jocelyn Torres, who has gotten valuable experience at Virginia Tech, and now to come in and really be key in beating a ranked team is huge for them. And, hopefully they'll be able to keep that going as they head into the Big Ten, which is never an easy conference to perform well in. So having a good goalie helps a lot in that case.
Emily, who do you want to point out?
I actually have two. So I was really impressed with Laurel Gonzalez with her 12 draw controls over Florida. I think that put Hopkins in a really great place for that to be the closest game. And, she's going to be a key factor in their season. Patriot League school, other than Loyola and Navy, that we don't really talk about often, Holy Cross had Sally Zingser score 6 goals and had 3 assists in a really dominant win over Fairfield. And, you know, Fairfield has been a team that has seen postseason play consistently. So it's cool to see a team like Holy Cross that has really been building over the last few years compete, you know, not really compete. They really dominated with a 9-goal win. And maybe they're going to be a little bit of a sleepy team in the Patriot League that we don't expect to give some of those top teams a little more competition than years past.
Yeah, for sure. And Kaylee Dyer, 5 goals for Michigan over Jacksonville. Again, Michigan is that team that, you know, there's this category of teams like Michigan, maybe Yale, you would put in that category of like, you know, they've taken, you know, very steady progressive steps. And now is a time for that leap because, you know, the leap into, you know, Final Four contention is really a very big one and not an easy one to accomplish. Lots of, you know, I would say this season is interesting because as much as we're still, you know, we're talking about Boston College a lot, we're talking about Northwestern a lot, we're talking about North Carolina a lot, it's a lot of the usual suspects, but there is so many changes in terms of the personnel. And I also think that there's less certainty for maybe who are those teams from 5 to 15 than, you know, normally. And I think that's why you saw some of these upsets that happened on the first weekend. You know, I'm not really accustomed to this many upsets. And, you know, it feels even bad to say the word upset because, you know, it's so early. We don't know, you know, yet because there's just such less data on these teams and so many people graduated from those extra COVID years and all this stuff. But Louisville beating number 15 Denver 10-8. Ohio State 2 days later beating number 15 Denver 9-5. Vermont an overtime win over Jacksonville on Sunday. UConn beating Drexel in overtime 10-9. And obviously Drexel has, you know, who you could argue is the best goalie in the country or certainly one of the top 3 or 4 goalies in the country. Richmond taking down the Big Ten's Penn State. They were ranked number 19. That was a 12-10 game. And then you even look at the close games. And, you know, we talked about Florida and Hopkins. That was an 11-10 game. Mount St. Mary's beating Towson 11-10. That was another local rivalry. Army 10, Rutgers 9. That win put Army back into the top 25. And, you know, talking more Patriot League, it's, I think, kind of men's and women's side, I think we're seeing a little bit of a resurgence of some of the Patriot League teams that are not just the top one or two. Really kind of just like, I think maybe set a tone that this year is going to be, you know, maybe outside of the top few teams, a little less predictable. From all those upsets, Emily, what sticks out to you of that group of upset games that we just identified right there?
I mean, I think the biggest thing and the biggest takeaway from a lot of these games is COVID is over. That, you know, we're not seeing, you know, women playing against little girls anymore, that we're seeing, you know, a little bit of an even playing field. The experience is a little bit more even. But I also think we're seeing a really great impact early on of these really phenomenal freshman players. I think, you know, the rankings of top girls for this current freshman class was kind of proven to be pretty accurate based on the output that we saw over the last few days.
Give yourself some pats on the back there for those rankings.
Is that a humble brag? No, and shout out to Madison Rassus, McKenzie, is still in high school. You know, a big performance on Sunday, getting her going. I think that would be a big one for Notre Dame to start utilizing her and get her comfortable. As another really talented freshman and a name, you know, it's like they cycled out 3 huge players that started their freshman year to senior year and entering another. But yeah, I think impressive by her as well.
Want to ask you guys, because you both played at a high level, and just like, just how hard is it as a freshman to like, what's going through your mind like that first game? And you know, how do you, and even if without taking COVID aside, when you're talking about a 21-year-old versus an 18-year-old, you know, even that's a pretty big difference as well. And someone who's been in a college weight room for 3 or 4 years, and you're just coming out of high school, like, what is your, mentally, how difficult is it to kind of get your feet under you?
I can start because my freshman year and Alyssa's freshman year are definitely two very different experiences. Mine was more like, whoa. I didn't get any playing time my freshman year, and I didn't deserve it because playing against, you know, people that are seasoned veterans, and, you know, it's really impressive to me when a freshman can step on the field and make an impact, because the speed of the game is so different. The physicality is so different. And someone that is not only physically prepared for that, but also mentally prepared for that, just shows that, you know, their preparation, their coaching that they had before they got to this level, really prepared them for what they are seeing. And I also think now there's a little bit of a difference because we have so much women's lacrosse accessible to us. You know, when we were playing, there wasn't really games that you could just watch on TV. There wasn't social media to watch highlights. So I think the exposure is also a really helpful piece to those high school players that are stepping on the field to play in college for the first time.
Yeah, and maybe seeing some of their peers, you know, like if you're the number five freshman and you know all the events that the number four freshman's at, you've seen all their highlights, you've, you know, there's so much exposure about all this stuff that, like, I think it maybe breeds a little bit of a competitiveness that didn't exist when you guys were playing. Alyssa, what's your kind of take on all that?
Yeah, I mean, I came out my first game back early season back. Obviously, there's nerves. For me, I was coming back from an ACL injury. I had gotten ACL surgery May of my senior year, so however many months that is to get to February. So I was like painfully slow as a turtle. I can't even believe that I was so slow. It took me probably, I mean, it was obviously you're nervous. Like you're just like, you've done all this work to get to this point and now you're actually there. So I think it's just a matter of like being confident in your skill set and just knowing that like you are there for a reason. Obviously I think the coaches and your teammates, you know, reminding the young players that like you're here for a reason and it's to make an impact is also super helpful. And, you know, by the mid to the end of the season where I felt like I had finally gotten a little bit of my footwork and speed back, that I don't think comes, you know, anyone who's torn their ACL and comes back probably would agree with this. Like you have to play in real games to have that real experience and feel good. By then it's like, okay, I can just play like I always have. And obviously always learning. I think you learned so much that first year where you're getting meaningful minutes. You know, even if you're a role player or like someone that doesn't necessarily play in games, that first year of just playing your teammates even is just like, okay, wow, like the game is faster. These are the adjustments I have to make and this is what I have to get better at. One of the things when I was coaching that I always tried to teach my players was like, you have to constantly self-evaluate. Like, you know, not that I was competing with my teammates. I mean, you are to get playing time, but like, you know, it's just like, okay, for me, it's like, okay, Michelle Tumalo is doing this better than I do. I need to learn how she does it so I can mirror that, like, and so I can do it too. So now we are two threats versus one. So it's things like that where it's like just self-evaluating at all times. And I think it's huge for freshmen to do that. And that's why you see like freshmen just coming into their own by like April. And then being a huge veteran, huge force and veteran by the time May rolls around.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the freshmen that we've seen this weekend, I think you can probably count on that they're only going to be better, you know, mm-hmm. 6 weeks from now, 8 weeks from now. And then certainly when we get to May, and remember, use that coupon code for $5 off your championship weekend tickets at Gillette Stadium, ILPOD. But One of the, you know, great things about women's lacrosse is it's still growing. And, you know, I think we saw two programs this weekend, Charlotte and South Florida, win their first ever games. Both scored the first goal of the game. Both kind of came out and played, you know, very confident, like they've been there before. Obviously, there's transfers on both those programs that kind of gave them a little bit more experience than just, you know, putting a group of a bunch of freshmen out there. Charlotte and South Florida, I think really you look at both these programs, you know, it's clear from an outsider's perspective when you look at, you know, stuff like who they brought in, Claire Short and Mindy McCord. And you look at the way that they promote the program in terms of, you know, their highlights and the professional photography and all of these things that, you know, I think that we've seen enough over the years that, like, they're indicative of how much the university, the community, the administration supports the programs. Charlotte and South Florida, I feel like, are both in really good spots to be successful programs over the years. And obviously one game, one win is not something that, you know, you're going to say the job is done, because clearly the job has just started. But Emily, when you see these teams winning their first games, you know, that's got to excite you a little bit for the future of women's lacrosse, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, these teams, it's hard because you never really know what you're going to get. There's absolutely no data to go off of. But like you're saying, I think it's these two programs in particular. And then you can go back to Clemson too. You know, these administrations are really backing, you know, the potential success of these teams. And, you know, when you feel your administration has your back, you're willing to, you know, work. It feels like it makes you a little bit more confident in what you're doing. And I think, you know, with a confident coach, that radiates to the team. And the team went into these two programs went into these games really feeling like they could make something happen. And they did. And it's super exciting. And it's going to be really exciting to see, you know, how the season unfolds for them. You know, Clemson immediately kind of zoomed to a top 25 team. And it's just proof that, you know, with the right coaches and the right recruiting and the right attitude, and cultivating the right team chemistry and environment, that this is possible.
Yeah, it's one of the things I love about women's lacrosse is that teams can come in with the right mindset, with the right lead-in. You know, it's one of those things where I think if you have a few years to build it up, generally works a little bit better. But you go back to Florida as a team that look at their first recruiting class and look at what they did the first few years. And, you know, we're still talking about them all these years later as a Final Four caliber team. Charlotte and South Florida look like they're in that mold of teams that are doing it the right way and will be fixtures of the top 25 going forward. Maybe not this year, but going forward, they certainly will be there. Now, this coming weekend, I didn't realize how, you know, obviously we were so excited about the first Friday of lacrosse. And, you know, as a staff, I remember that Thursday on our conference call, we're just talking about, like, you know, who do we have on 11 a.m.? Who do we have on at 1 a.m.? Who do we have on at 4 p.m.? Who do we have on at 8 p.m.? It was just an exciting kind of, oh my God, this is awesome lacrosse all day, which is something the men's schedule can't seem to figure out, with every game being at noon or 1 o'clock. So it was awesome to have that. But then you look at this weekend and I'm like, oh my God, like it's just as good, if not better. I slept on the second weekend of the season because I was so focused on the first weekend. Florida versus North Carolina, Boston College versus Northwestern. We already talked about that one a little bit. Duke versus Johns Hopkins, and Duke was a team that won two games this weekend, and I think looked pretty impressive, you know, in the course of doing so. Virginia versus Princeton, Yale versus Michigan. Yale's you know, again, we kind of lumped these two teams into that same category as the team that's ready to make the next step. So we're going to kind of see a preview of that this weekend. Syracuse versus Maryland, a rivalry you guys have been a part of. And also it's, you know, obviously two of the most storied programs in college lacrosse. And that one's going to be down in College Park. It's going to be a doubleheader, that game. And then the men's game is going to be just a little bit behind that. We talked about BC Northwestern, so take that one out of the equation. But of these games, which one is going to be the most, let's say the most significant? You know, which one is that you're looking for the result as kind of like the most significant bellwether of like what to see in the future? Emily, we'll start with you.
I'm super excited for the Yale Michigan game. Like we were saying, I think, you know, they're kind of in the same pool of teams that are looking to get over a little bit of a hump. You saw both of them do really well last year. So it's cool to see two teams like that kind of go head to head, and we'll see who finishes out on top. They both have a lot of key players. Both teams have a lot of experience, so it should be a really good matchup.
And Yale, I think, you know, not to get ahead of themselves, but I think you're looking at that game as, you know, it's going to take them a few weeks before they get tested with another opponent on that level. So I think you're looking at that game, you really want to make an impression early, you know, before you maybe get a little bit lost in the shuffle nationally, you know, when they're not playing as high caliber of competition. Alyssa?
For sure, I agree with that on Yale. It would be easy for me to say Syracuse, Maryland, so I'm not going to say that. But I'm excited to watch Virginia, Princeton. I think Virginia is like, I think they have the opportunity to be like outstanding this year. You know, I think they had really strong freshmen and young players last year. Obviously, not to take away from their veterans that they had graduated, but it's kind of like, you know, you had these really talented freshmen come in, making an impact right away. And it's kind of like, all right, let's build off of this. And now we're not the rookies anymore. So I'm interested to see how far they can push. And, you know, there's a little bit bigger of a spread, number 9 versus number 17, Princeton. But if they make a statement in that game, I think people will be definitely. And then, oh, there's so many. I just keep changing my mind. But. Yeah, I'll stick with that one. I'm interested to see how UVA does.
Well, and I'll talk a little bit about Syracuse, Maryland. You know, like, I think this is a game that, I don't know, like, I want to say that there's less buzz around each of these programs than there has been in past years. And don't get me wrong, they're both top 10 programs. So we're not, like, saying, you know, it's...
they're not being snubbed.
They're not being snubbed by any means. But it's just a little bit, like we said, we're talking about BC Northwestern, we're talking about Florida and North Carolina. And this game is, you know, a little bit under the radar from that. And I'm curious how Maryland, and I'm a Maryland grad, and I know you guys have some Syracuse love there in terms of Alyssa playing there 4 years, and Emily, you played there for how many years?
Two.
I'm curious Maryland's, I guess you could say, youth movement that they have going on right now, how that they're going to look with some new players, some new blood. Obviously, it's Maryland. They're tremendous players. They're going to be among the best players, and they're going to be among the best teams in college lacrosse. I do think people forget that at one point Maryland was the number one team in the country last year. You know, they were a team that, you know, things broke a little bit differently, could have made some noise in the NCAA tournament. Syracuse obviously has some losses, but also has some tremendous returners as well. So I think in terms of, like, this is going to give them good baseline of who they are, but I expect both coaching staffs, as good as they are, to adjust and learn from this game as much as anybody in the country will. But it's all going to be very exciting, no matter what happens. So that's the great thing is, like I said, don't sleep on week two. Week one was awesome, but week two might be even better. And we're going to be back here with the podcast. We're planning to do every 2 to 3 weeks, probably every 3 weeks, but sometimes we might shift up the schedule a little bit, rotating with our D3 podcast and some of our high school coverage. But we'll continue to be back talking women's lacrosse, and make sure to follow the scoreboard all weekend long. Follow Iowa Women, and Alyssa and Emily, thanks for taking some time.
Thank you.